Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT 2.0. That's the only time I will say that. I will not say that in the future. And of all the dumb things that happened on this show, there was a lot of good, a lot of bad. We're going to cover a lot. It was certainly different. We got people here listening, that's for sure. And a couple of people ready to be on the show. We got some emails. Some folks think the sky is definitely falling, but the worst thing they did was force everyone to say NXT 2.0. Bad when Vic says it, but Vic is basically like just a slab of cheese. So it doesn't bother me that he has to say NXT 2.0. But having Tommaso Ciampa say it is no good. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games, folks. This is new NXT. This is the fresh coat of paint. I'm convinced that that statement is where they got the idea for the graffiti type thing that they're doing. And we're going to talk. Normally we start with the main event, but truly the main event of this show, even though we had a four-way championship and a wedding that went on after the four-way championship, the main event here are the changes. So let's get that out of the way. I got the usual gang of idiots here. I will throw to them after I read at least one email and maybe more. This is from Ginny Edelstone. No, don't. Don't try to tell me to give it a chance. The black and gold is gone. The black ring cover is gone. The pacing is 50 times more hyper than when they went head-to-head with AEW. I went to season 6 of NXT and watched it while this awful rendition of my beloved NXT played in the background. I wanted to see how the new wrestlers, Bo, Seth, were introduced. That's Bo Dallas and Seth Rollins, very, very close to the beginning. They got videos and a chance to introduce themselves, but not these newbies. And why would Von Wagner, who would be put in a championship match? Bullshit. Why not Escobar or Swerve? But yay, Ciampa got his Goldie back. No, don't try to tell me to give it a chance. I've been an NXT fan since season 6, and this is not NXT. I've been a fan since season 1, and I think this certainly had a lot more in common with that, but it was probably very – I think they bit off more than they could chew with number of talents brought on a single episode. That is I think, a mess to try to get this many people over at once. It's hard enough to get one person over at once. And if it's going to be a developmental show, and it is, then I can see why – Vince and company would think it doesn't matter if they're over right away. But given that this is an existing show on paid cable on USA Network that they paid for with an existing fan base, there are going to be some really big growing pains in terms of what people expect and what this show is actually going to be. I had thought that the changes would be either more minor or slower to roll out than this, but it was quick. This show has pretty much been going at like 50 to 55 minutes of in-ring action a week. This week it was 30. So they really ratcheted that down. Also, minutes per match was an insane difference because we had been rolling with sometimes as few as 4, sometimes as many as 7 matches. This week we got 8, and those 8 matches added up to about 30 minutes, most of which was aired. There was only a commercial during one match, and that was the main event, which for a championship match, especially one with 4 guys in it, was very brief. Let's go to JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. While I don't have any huge problems with the shakeup tonight, aside from the camera cuts, I do take some umbrage with the cold introductions. I don't have a problem debuting new guys, but I do have an issue with the volume of guys that debuted tonight and in such prominent positions without much explanation or backstory. Just calling one particular episode a rebrand shouldn't really be an excuse to do this. Continuity still needs to matter. Also, no one can convince me calling it NXT 2.0 and hammering us over the head with it main roster style isn't dumb. Well, I'm not going to try to convince you of that, JB, because it is wildly dumb to say NXT 2.0. Like, what are they going to do in 3 months when this is clearly what NXT is. There's no reason to say NXT 2.0 at that point. So I typed in my recap, either hopefully this was a one-week mandate or it will quietly die on the vine in a few months and just go away. I will first go to Tom because Tom and I do the VIP show NXT 8 years back, and we're going to draw a lot of parallels. In the short term, we're going to talk probably a lot about the differences and sames between this show and that one 8 years ago. I saw a lot of touchstones of that show 8 years ago, but they tried to get – it's a two-hour show, so that's going to be part of the problem. It was a one-hour show then, and it was a TV show at the beginning, so it was like 42, 43 minutes. So they were only trying to get a couple of new talents over at a time, and I thought they bit off a very large amount here. I thought there was a lot to like, and I thought there were some very significant things to dislike. This week, Tom Staub, who are you? And you and I, let's talk about how this compares to what NXT used to be.
Yes, that is what we are going to do, and those are comparisons we are going to draw, because indeed I am at Tom Staub on Twitter, and I've heard rumors that I occasionally say things on this show. I will say tonight that I am looking forward to, after seemingly so long, it feels like so long, of constantly having these just ridiculously meaty subjects to dig our fingers into on the podcast. I'm looking forward to getting back to more straightforward analysis on Tuesday nights, because this is yet another with multiple emails about it. It's rightfully so, but it is yet another subject where I'm like, I'm looking up and down my notes and I'm like, man, where do I even start? But I will say that while a lot of this I will also try to dole out through the rest of the show rather than dumping it all right now at the top, I will say that most of my thoughts are positive and line up with what I was thinking, that it's mostly going to feel like the same show conceptually, pacing wise and just the general presentation, being in the same room with a lot of the same people, same commentary and everything. It's just going to get, yes, that fresh coat of paint. And for the look, like the color, I don't care. It could be all highlighter green. Actually, I'd probably like that because I'm such a Triple H mark, but just the way that the thing that made me most optimistic for actually liking the look rather than just being indifferent to like whatever about it, was that little, graphic or whatever they showed us in the promos. What's the word? There's a word, wireframe or whatever it is. That's,
oh, the wireframe in the – are you talking about the Chiron, or are you just talking about the
– No, the little promos that they would show, like, during Raw or whatever. There's a word that's – I lost you again, but I believe that you probably said the right thing. What I'm getting at is just that the way that they've set up the audience made me a little hopeful that this was actually going to be an improvement rather than a lateral move that just accomplished being a visual signal of, like, hey – it's different now, like a wrestler, you know, shaving their beard a little bit differently or dyeing their hair from blonde to brown. I really like the way that the audience is set up. It has much more of a studio feel. We have always compared NXT to a studio show, but it hasn't had that look. And now with the crowd a little bit more set back rather than appearing to be right up on the apron, I think it's a vastly improved look that just, I mean, they're still in the Performance Center, but they have absolutely maximized that space. It, you know, the way that they've laid everything out, it looks like they've expanded the space, even though they have not. Even vertically, the ceiling looks higher. Like WrestleMania didn't even look that big when they set it up in that exact same room. And there are other little things, like they're going back to using the jib arm a lot more, which was something that I so closely associate with the NXT at Full Sail way of filming things. They love using that jib arm, and I always sort of chuckle to myself about it because that is such a Full Sail thing. I remember when I first walked on the campus to do my open house to like sell me on, you know, this is why you want to become a student here. The first thing I saw was somebody who had just been recruited to sit there and work a jib arm. Like, look at this impressive equipment. And if you're a student here, you can use this. So I'm like, of course they're using that jib arm in at the full sail shows. And so they're using WWE's using their own, I imagine. And it gives that same feel. So, yeah, I think the surprise is indeed in just how much new talent they infused. I expected this to be a little bit more coddling of people that were worried about it, and they perhaps in turn were throwing the audience into the fire, but they were throwing a lot of trainees into the fire here, just like, okay, almost every single segment is, you know, new blood, new blood, new blood, which I love to see because that's why I'm here. Even if they aren't great and not every match on this show was great, there was one in particular that really felt like it wasn't even dark match material. It felt like training match material. And I was still like, you know what, from where I selfishly am sitting, this is what brought me to the NXT table to begin with, to see these people developing on a television program. What you bring up, Kelly, is the concern of, while that's something that I've been wanting to see from NXT for a long time, since they are not gradually going into it here, they are really, like, you know, our favorites are still there. But there's so much new blood right off the bat. It is a little bit like, well, is this sustainable for how they are planning on drawing ratings? But, you know, it's, as we will continue to say, as you suggested, and I agree, this is so much more. I mean, I'm stepping on McGivern's email, but McGivern emailed about something else. And then at the end of the email, he mentions, you know, I you know, this is like Monday Night Raw minor leagues. And again, that is what brought me to the table. I loved the NXT Full Sail concept at the beginning of being minor league Raw. They deliberately set it up to be exactly that. And so they are going back to that. I think what I'll wrap up the this overlong intro by saying is just that I think that they got to a point where they, in putting NXT in a two-hour format on network television in for the purpose of competing with another program, they tore down what NXT was. It was still black and gold. It still had the same wrestlers on it and everything, but they tore down what NXT was. And after, you know, conceding to the new night and not being direct competition anymore and the ratings stagnating, the TV format is still different. The TV contract is still in place. So I feel like all the more because of that, the refresh is great for me personally, where I'm coming from as a viewer, what brings me to the table. It's great for me to see, because this is so much more of what I wanted from NXT. Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight, so I'm looking forward to digging into the more specific segments.
Let's take a counterpoint from CF Falvey. Hi, guys. Nope, just no. The usual absurd camera cuts with the 60 colors on top nearly gave me a seizure. Ciampa wins the title that he adores back for the first time in 3 years, and they immediately cut away. Yeah, that sucked. Tony D'Angelo was the single worst thing I've ever seen on television. Chicago Al Capone, tough guy in 2021. The guys who write this are clearly in their 60s plus. Who was the guy who nearly won the title who looks like a pasty giant collie? Again, he nearly won the title because a guy was attacked and he happened to be in the vicinity. I love NXT. I've watched every episode. I'm watching every show from 8 years ago weekly because I want to watch it and then listen to you guys talk about it afterwards. I don't think I'll watch NXT next week. Chris from Milwaukee. I think there are going to be a lot of takes like this, and they just ripped the Band-Aid off. Like, I really, really thought, as Tom did, that they would kind of bring the audience on a slow journey to this. I don't think they did a lot of these talents any favors by throwing them all out there on the same show. There's obviously a hierarchy for who they think is ready for a bigger spot and who they don't. But I think that this is going to be, people who had trouble with this episode might find that even though it doesn't change from this a whole lot over the next 6 weeks, it will become a much easier show to digest because we're going to have these talents are going to be more established on TV, and it's not going to feel like we're relearning everything. But right now it does kind of feel like two different shows, one where all these new talents are being thrown at us, and one where the talents that have been anchoring the show are now kind of fighting for camera time. Like by the time Cameron Grimes showed up, I was just like, oh yeah, that's this show that I'm watching, because it's so different in so many ways that it actually kind of threw me for a loop. Nathaniel, you are a comparative newcomer to NXT. So you didn't see the NXT that has the most in common with what's going on now. So very interested to hear your take, because this is very new stuff for you.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's super new stuff, because I wasn't necessarily doing things for the Torch back then, but I still watched the product for a bit. I came into the product at Arrival for the most part. However, I did catch, you know, a few episodes of NXT here and there. Didn't watch it necessarily like you guys did. Now, I have a lot. I've got a lot to digest still, I think, before I come to a real conclusion here. However, this was really kind of exactly what I had a feeling was going to happen. To be honest with you, I thought the changes were going to be kind of instant like this in terms of the look of the show, the feel of the show. I did say last night on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post show that I thought the changes would be a little bit slower, but it's weird. Like I kind of had a feeling that they were going to be fast, but I'll be honest. I had you guys in my ears, and I kind of did have you guys convince me that they weren't going to be rolled out quite as quickly as this. It kind of made sense to me. I felt like the general consensus from the audience was, and at least, you know, our listeners and things like that, was, you know, that they didn't necessarily want a lot of these changes. And there's a lot of hesitation and concern there. I know that, you know, we talked about it. I was immediately concerned for NXT when I saw that logo for the first time and things like that. Getting into the show and all these changes and things like that, I guess I'm going to start with the things that I really did not like. I absolutely hate the overhaul of the CWC. It looks like a studio show. Yeah, sure. Absolutely, it does. It looks like it's in a high school gymnasium. It does not look like it's in a mini arena. It doesn't look like – it doesn't look as high-tech as it did – well, I mean, last week, I guess, on TV, last week, I'm sure it looked halfway like that. Look the way it does now, they're probably building it, but it didn't look like the CWC at all. And now, granted, they're going for a completely different look. I get that. I understand that. It looked so empty. The building looked really empty. The fact that there wasn't anything above the crowd, there was just, for the most part, a big white wall and then a neon NXT logo that looked like it was pulled straight out of the 90s. It just felt like they slapped an NXT logo up on the side of a high school gym. And they put some nice chairs around there and some nice lights. Like, don't get me wrong. The presentation itself wasn't bad, but the execution, I do not like it at all. I wish they put some sort of like an LED board. And I've not even gone on record and said I don't like LED boards for the most part. But I wish they did put an LED board or something above the crowd. We've had that. We've had the LED board in the background now for the entire COVID era. It's kind of – you kind of get used to seeing things a little bit busier up there. And it just – I don't know. It just felt – lesser to me tonight. And I really tried to give it a chance throughout the show. I really, really did. I tried to make it, you know, like, okay, this is a rebrand, this is a reset, but I just felt like I was watching a studio show, not a mini Monday Night Raw, not a mini SmackDown. It felt a lot lesser. It did not feel as big as AEW. And granted, you know, we're not necessarily comparing NXT to AEW like we were during the, quote, Wednesday Night Wars, but that comparison's still there. Everybody still compares those two brands because of that. And it did not feel like that. It did not feel nearly as big as AEW. And again, I'm talking just in terms of the look of the show. I did like some of the changes in terms of some of the new talent and the kind of the direction to go back to what you guys were talking about with, you know, some more squash matches and things like that, and kind of getting back to you know, the roots of NXT. I'm okay with things like that and whatever, but this is not NXT. This is not, like, I'm kind of halfway between where you guys are and where our first emailer, Ginny, was. This isn't the NXT that I know and I love. It's not that black and gold. I love the black and gold, man. I really do. The black ring cover, I love that. I really wish they kept that. It's been the black and gold brand, and I understand they're trying to get away from that, but you establish yourself as the black and gold brand. Monday Night Raw has always been red. SmackDown's always been blue. NXT's been yellow and black. And it's not anymore. And I think that is very, that can be very alarming to quite a few people that grow accustomed to those colors being associated with those brands. And as stupid as that sounds, I think a lot of people actually will have a problem with that. It's, I don't know. I there's a lot that I like, and there's, and cause like it's, change is not bad. There's not necessarily – change isn't inherently bad. But I don't know. A lot of the stuff – like this guy, what, Bron Breaker or whatever, the guy with two Ks in his last name. I liked him kind of, sort of, but, like, what was up with that singlet? It was, like, pulled straight out of the 90s. Like,
dude, he's literally wearing a singlet that evokes his dad. Rick Steiner.
Okay, where it was a different name, I wasn't sure if that was him or not.
Yeah, this is Rex Steiner, the son of Rick Steiner. He's literally just wearing his dad's gear, basically.
All right, because I've seen pictures of him, but I couldn't quite necessarily place him. So, all right, makes sense. I didn't realize that was him with the stupid name. I couldn't focus on anything but the 2 K's in his last name.
It's a rotten, rotten name. And Rex Steiner would have been just fine.
Why not call attention
made
to the fact.
People? Yeah, because people, I saw some takes about the singlet, and I'm like, well, if you know who it is, you at least see the reasoning behind the singlet.
And quite honestly,
it reminded me of Vader's son wearing swatches on his trunks.
if I realized that's who it was, then I probably wouldn't have said anything, or I probably would have praised it. But I had no idea that's who it was. Like I said, I just focused on a stupid last name. I don't want to keep rambling about it because, you know, obviously we've got callers and we've got other emails and things like that and other things to talk about. But one thing that I said with Zach Hadorn last night was NXT really needed to hit this out of the park tonight. They needed to come out of the gate stupidly strong because there was so much negative hype going into the show. I don't know if they pulled off a successful enough show to get those quote haters to actually tune in again next week. I'm nervous. I'm nervous. Where I didn't necessarily hate the show, I don't know if the overall NXT crowd is going to want to stick around. I'm concerned.
That's not necessarily the goal. So, like, I get what you're saying, but, like, everybody's talking about this in terms of, well, this needs to be awesome in the way that it was, and it's literally not the show anymore. And you say it looks smaller. It's supposed to. You say it doesn't look as big as AEW. It's not supposed to. This is supposed to look like a smaller, stripped-down show that is the proving ground for Raw and SmackDown.
And I totally understand that. Like, I get that. But say, for example, you just kind of tuned out of NXT for the past couple weeks, tuned out of wrestling. You didn't know this rebrand happened, right? And all of a sudden you tune back into NXT. You're going to be like, I have a feeling like that casual audience member is not, what the heck is this? It's going to be different. Maybe it's good enough to hook them in. I don't know. I think I might need to process this a little bit more, but I'm where it doesn't look as I don't know what the right word is for it, but where it doesn't look as it did, you know, before, it didn't look quite as, it looks just empty now and it's stripped down. It doesn't feel quite as important. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't feel quite as important as it did. What is going to necessarily make somebody want to tune in from just the visual look of the show? Wrestling is a visual product. Don't you want to have something that's visually appealing rather than strip it back?
I like this visually more than almost any other wrestling I'm watching. Legit. Like, I prefer it visually to either Raw or SmackDown already. Like, by a long shot. I don't need the big bombast of Raw and SmackDown. It's basically like, if I want that shit, I'll watch the Transformers, and I don't want that at all. I prefer this look. I know that spectacle draws a lot of people. It's not what I'm looking for. I think that we're going to have a lot of really strange conversations because I think that their intent now is so different that the way we're talking about NXT needs to fundamentally change.
Yeah.
Because I don't think what you're saying about will this alienate viewers is 100% right, because it will. And I think genuinely right now the goal isn't viewers for this show. Like, every show needs to be that to some degree, but I think they're really, really, really thinking about this more as a developmental show. But of course, USA Network has every right to be pissed off about that, because they had a brand that was promoting itself as a lateral brand from Raw and SmackDown. And while they were on USA Network, Vince said, just kidding, now you get what we are branding as the minor leagues, like actually branding as the minor leagues. So USA's got every right to be mad about that. And I've read some stories to the effect that they are. And that makes sense to me. I'm probably going to enjoy this show more in terms of what I get to talk about coming out of it. Like, I'm certainly, but it's going to be really weird constantly comparing it to a show that, like, is dead now. Like, it's absolutely dead. It was here last week and even acted like normal last week. There were four matches last week that were longer than the four-way championship this week. The longest match was, of course, the four-way championship, but it went 10:38. There were four matches longer than that last week. So it's going to be wildly different, and I think it's going to ask us to recalibrate what we think of it, not only what we think of the show, but what WWE is intending for the show to be. And a lot of those things, and even the things that'll be positive for them, will be seen as a negative for fans, because we're robbed of all those really good matches that we had been getting on a regular basis. There's a lot of things that people are going to miss a lot, because wrestling is supposed to be a comfortable shoe that you put on. And for a lot of people, NXT has been that comfortable shoe. And now it's a whole brand new pair of shoes. Some very flashy Jordans from the 90s, obviously. But yes, it's, I think these conversations are like Nate, I don't think you're wrong. It's just like, we're talking about so many different facets of the changes, and all these things.
You
are
actually
right,
don't think I'm wrong.
No. That's
how about that?
That's a gimmick, Nate. But don't ever remind me I said that, because I'll deny it in the future.
Of course.
I think that it's just, I don't know. It's going to be really fun, but really difficult to talk about in the short term. We have longtime friend, longtime listener, Darrell here from Georgia, and I'll be putting him on in a second. By the way, that is 515-605-9345, or you can email us as all those others did and more did at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Darrell, I'm going to bring you on. We have been talking NXT, you and I, and these idiots for kind of a while. And these changes were abrupt. So let me know what you thought.
Okay. Yes. And how are you guys doing today? And I'm also a person who's been watching NXT for, back when it was on Hulu. Back in the days where I originally remember when Jim Ross was on the announce booth with William Regal and Dusty was the GM. So if I'm not mistaken, the first episode was the tournament that crowned Seth Rollins as champion. So
first handful of episodes. Like they ran it out over a few. They didn't do the whole tournament the first show, but they got that championship out of the way relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so hey, been on it for a while, ground up. It favored a lot of FCW how it was back in the day when they first started taking it. So this show right here, and before I hopped on here, I was listening to, because Cameron Hawkins had a Twitter space open. Had quite a few people on there, maybe 100 people on there. And most of those people said they haven't watched NXT in a while because it seemed so dark and other stuff like that. And they seemed to love it. I like that it was a little bit lighter. I like the theme song with Wale. The space that they're in since they've been outside of Full Sail was small anyway, but it looked bigger because you had more than just the three rows and the pods, and you had fans surrounding the whole entire ring. So that's what made it look like a bigger studio show, like old studio shows from back in the unbaked and TVs and all that. So that was one good thing about it. And I think we're looking at certain stuff, which is going to go into my first thing for you guys. We're looking at certain stuff, and I don't think we had too many new people who we haven't seen on the show before, except a couple, like one who came out there was tagging with Josh Briggs and stuff like that. But the only person who got a real look and a push was the dog-faced Gremlin Son, who they was hitting the whole match. And they mentioned he looks like he could be a dog-faced gremlin. So, you know, that's the only person out of all these new people who they said got a push. Everybody who got a win tonight was somebody who they were pushing, and they were continuing the storylines that they've been setting up for weeks. But my first question for you guys would be is, after seeing that match, you see they're giving him a little push, and it looks like he's going to be a little short-time robbery thing for Tommaso Ciampa. What do you guys think about him, and how did you feel about him beating L.A. Knight, and they tried to set it up when L.A. Knight was giving his promo, because I took that as an indication that L.A. Knight wasn't winning, and he might be going up, going sideways, or however they want to say it now, since all of that. What do you guys think?
So when Bron Breakker opened this show and he won that match with LA Knight, and they could have had it with anybody, and why, I guess it's a bit of a logical fallacy that LA Knight would be the guy who would actually double book himself, because of course he wouldn't. He would say, no, I'm not working some new guy on the night that I'm in my championship match. But they wanted Breakker to have a strong win and to position him as a babyface. So they put him against LA Knight, who is right now the most effective heel at getting heat in NXT. So I get it from that standpoint. When he won and then he got all those backstage congratulations from the as yet unseen to us wrestlers. I knew that he was going to bookend this show, but I thought they were going to give the championship to LA Knight, even though I'm on record as saying he's going to be fast-tracked. He's going to be up in the main roster before long, LA Knight is, because he's too good, and he's not, like, young. So, you know, move him up. So on the good, I think that he inherited a lot of things about Rick Steiner had, the aggression, the playfulness. On the downside, he also inherited Rick Steiner's not so awesomeness on the stick. And he's way earlier. And on the extreme negative side of things, Bron Breakker is a dumber name that we've seen in a really, really long time. And as Tom also pointed out, the font on his entrance video is like an assault to mankind. It's really, really bad. 2 K's in Breakker, that's horrible. Bron, spelled B-R-O-N, and even just reusing Bron feels like kind of an insult to me. I don't even care that much about Braun Strowman, but like when I heard it said, I was like, that's not cool. And Breakker it's a bad, bad name. Like, this name is so bad, I can see it being changed without anything said about it next week, which, by the way, Tom and I did see on occasion in NXT 8 years back. If somebody came in under a really bad moniker, they would just change it. But now that they've got Bron Breakker positioned as like a top of the card player, maybe that's too late. But at the end of the show, Ciampa is your new champion, and he's watching the wedding on a monitor. And this is where we get our big stinger that I thought would have maybe more to do with the wedding, but it did not. Bron Breakker congratulates Ciampa. Ciampa extends a hand and, you know, is going to treat him like a kid because he is. And Breakker takes a good long look at Goldie. Will he wedge that away? I thought there was a very, very good chance that Breakker was going to end this episode as champion. And I said that right after his first segment. Then they put some other clown in there that Tom can tell you more about because he, as a local, he's seen the former Cal Bloom many, many times. But I like the intent behind what they're doing with Bron Breakker. I like the same things they like about him, but the things that are extreme works in progress are just that. Tom, what did you think?
So this is maybe just because of the timing of it on the show it's definitely the main place where I will unleash a bit of criticism. What I think is criticism, I'm trying to get into the heads of the people who are not on board with this after only one episode. And I saw it when it happened. I was just like, okay, I'm fine with legacy stars because we've seen them and been cheering them on for years, even though they have to overcome some skepticism. And I'm fine with former footballers or people coming in from places other than the indies because, you know, the indies where so many bad habits have been learned for a number of years now. And I feel like that's a major reason why WWE is changing the approach with NXT, because they have to spend so much of the time at the PC unteaching things that are learned on what the independent scene has become. But I would ask anyone to just think for a second about how many wrestlers you love from any era who are exactly that, former footballers who maybe are there because of their family, but especially former footballers or people there from a different sport who learned to do this before the indies became what they are now. And they're legends and they're our favorites and everything. So I'm fine with that part of it, but that's me. And this is the opening of the show. The first face we see is Pete Dunne. The first person who speaks is Tommaso Ciampa. I'll come back to that because I thought that was a very telling, maybe that's too strong a word to use after only one episode, but that was definitely like, okay, I think I see what they're doing. They're easing us in. And like I said, there was more throwing to the fire than I expected, but they were easing us in. And then, boom, here comes Bron Breakker. and he looks like Riddick Moss got a haircut and is now playing the role of Mojo Rawley, which is not a good thing.
Oh my
and,
God, you're right.
Yeah, like I legitimately had to look up whether it was actually Riddick Moss with a new haircut because of the new name. It threw me. So, and you know, Mojo Rawley just, I probably would have thought of that anyway, but Mojo Rawley just debuted on NXT 8 years back, like 8 years ago. We're talking about the very earliest days of Mojo Rawley now, if you go VIP.
Yeah, we're in a tough timeline right now. we're heavy on Enzo and Cass, and now Mojo jumped in.
Yeah. So yeah, it wasn't all roses. Like, we see it for what it is, but then he speaks and it's just flat awful. And it's like, how would you describe it? It's like the enthusiastic, it didn't match up with the character that he played for the rest of the show, where it was like the wide-eyed enthusiastic person who's happy to be there. And yes, once I realized it wasn't actually Riddick Moss, and saw who it was, I got the gear. But the bright gear going along with the wide-eyed look and, of course, the gear matching the new color scheme and everything, it was just like, I don't know if this is what people who are worried about NXT's changes want to see. So, honestly, they should have just cut the whole talking bit, just left the LA Knight thing the way it was and then cut before Breaker comes in. Because then the match was fine. The match was perfectly fine. We still need to see a lot more from this kid, but it was fine. And yeah, it definitely, it was very weird to me that LA Knight was working two matches on the show. That was very strange to me. And I was still kind of wondering if they were going to work something, and they brought this up again later and made me wonder again if they were going to push off the match and do a title, a contender's program out of this vacancy situation they found themselves in. But yeah, I did. They clearly sent a strong signal after he had to work from behind the awfulness of that backstage segment. They did signal like, hey, this is a dude to keep your eye on. So they succeeded in that much.
Tom, I think one of the things that's going to be very different, and one of the reasons that this is looking different from the NXT that our first emailer said, so many differences here from that. And I think the specific differences they're talking about might be attributable to the fact that those talents in 2013 and 12 were not being asked to go out there on live TV. There were, I said, this is warts and all in our talk, like as we were chatting during the show, but they didn't necessarily show us warts and all 8 years ago because some of the warts were left on the cutting room floor. And now certainly some of these scenes were shot beforehand, but I think that it's going to be tougher for some of these developmental talents on TV because they can't just reshoot stuff as they were doing at that time. And I wonder if that's what feels so different, because this now feels like a show that should be taped. It really does. And I have typically enjoyed taped shows more and then love the feel of live pay-per-view wrestling.
It does indeed feel like a show that should be taped. It does feel like a show that should be on Peacock rather than on live TV. Yeah. And you know, anybody can extrapolate there as they will. And of course I have said before that I kind of hope it goes that way. Yes, very, very selfishly, because Sling just upped their prices and it's NXT is the only reason I'm still paying that bill. It's literally the only thing I ever watch on there. And it's my most expensive monthly subscription. But, I think another thing is that I will just throw out, and I've mentioned this before, I just from starting going to tapings in 2017 up through when the pandemic hit, and only missing one taping along that in that period of time, they refilm less than you think they do. But it is still a safety net is there. And you, it's the difference of knowing that what you're doing in this instant isn't necessarily going to go out to all of the eyeballs. And in the period since 2013, what fans, and probably what you could describe as the hardcore fans who are the primary portion of NXT's, the type of person who is predisposed to watching a show like NXT, the type of match that those fans have adjusted to thinking is a, quote, good match, has changed. Like, again, going VIP 8 years back, we just saw the very first of several two out of three fall matches between Cesaro and Sami Zayn. At the time, and it was a very, very good match, but at the time, it was a big deal to people who were paying attention to it because they were like, whoa, this is what we want wrestling to be. And yet now, 8 years later, you look back at it and it still isn't up to what most people consider the work rate that that I consider reckless and counteractive as far as like telling stories and preserving your bump card and whatnot. But it is objectively what a lot of people are looking for nowadays, even on your weekly television show.
Yeah, it's amazing how what people expect out of a wrestling match can be so different. Because, like, one of my favorite matches to this day is a fairly nondescript match between Ricky Steamboat and Rick Rude on Royal Rumble 1988. And it's almost all Steamboat working Rude's wrist and arm. And, God, I love it. Because it's so strong psychologically, and Steamboat can do any damn bump you ask of him. But as you say, he preserved his bump card. What a lovely match that is. Ends in disqualification. I don't even care. I mean, I kind of care, but I don't like super care. Nate, you also love the name Bron Breakker.
Oh God. It's fantastic. I love it. It was amazing. God, I can't stand it. I don't know what the heck they were thinking with not just Bron Breakker, but some of the other names on this show, which we'll get to, I'm sure, at some point. All right, so let's get into Bron Breakker. When he first...
Bron Breakker is such a bad name.
Oh, it's terrible. It's awful.
It's such a bad name that...
Michael McGillicuddy.
Given what we've seen in terms of intelligence level in promos from the Steiner family over the years, I feel like they had to have come up with it.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, God, you know, you're absolutely right. And you know what? I guess that those promo abilities kind of carry through the genes here. I'm not going to reiterate a whole heck of a lot of what these guys have already said, but, you know, there's a lot of people that were nervous coming into tonight. And it's something I even said earlier tonight, too. A lot of people just kind of negative hype going into the show. And they were afraid that, you know, there's going to be some, like, main rostery changes and whatnot. And within the first, 3 minutes of this show, we get this absolutely god-awful, abysmal promo from Bron Breakker with two K's, not just one, two, because two K's better than one. That's going to be my official slogan for Bron Breakker now.
When you told me, Nate, that it was Breakker with two K's, I'm like, well, obviously Nate saw it wrong because that's the worst thing of all time.
Well, and you would assume I would just see something wrong. How often am I wrong, right? Like, how often does that happen? So,
right.
And I'm like, no, I literally went back three times, and I'm not even kidding. I went back three times because I didn't want to believe there were two K's in that name. And then I screenshotted it, and I sent it to Kelly and Tom, and I'm like, nope, there it is. It's terrible. The font is amazingly awful. It's so bad. It's an eyesore. It looks like it's a typo. It really does. The K looks like it's a typo. I'm really hoping it's a typo. Please be a typo. Just change his name, please.
At least one thing in the world that's worse than something with only two Ks in it.
I mean, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You know,
graduated with a guy whose initials were that.
Oh,
I'm sorry, buddy.
His parents.
I'm sorry.
His first name and middle name, absolutely names that always start with C. They cheat. They took intent to make them start with K.
That's terrible. That's awful. And speaking of awful, getting back to this promo, it was so bad that if I was just watching NXT tonight, because I'll be honest, I had a rough day. I was not really looking forward to watching NXT tonight. I kind of went into this thinking negatively. And like I even said it last night talking with Zach, I was being optimistic last night. I just had a bad day and I was going into this not in the greatest of moods. And when I saw that promo, and if I didn't need to do this and I didn't need to write the hits and misses, I probably would have shut my TV off right then and there. It was that bad. I'm like, if that's what these changes are going to be, I don't want nothing to do with it. I will admit he was better in the ring, and I kind of like the interaction with Ciampa at the very end. But man, that promo in the beginning was not the way to kick off NXT 2.0. I understand it's a live show. You can't reshoot things. I get it. However, you could actually pre-tape that and just air it live. That was a backstage thing, right? So hopefully it was live and it was just that bad and it wasn't pre-taped and it was just, and it was that bad. But yeah, I'm going to like go into this with, or go into the future here with Bron Breakker, with some optimism, because I do think he's got something. He's got the look. And I actually am glad that I didn't realize that he was Rick Steiner's son at the time. I knew Rick Steiner's son was in WWE in developmental, and like I knew he was set to debut. I just didn't realize, put two and two together until you said something, Kelly.
You were a little younger, so you maybe didn't get the dog-faced gremlin line. Did you hear them say that, a dog-faced gremlin?
Honestly,
That was Rick Steiner's nickname his entire career. Yeah.
If I did hear them say that, I probably would have put two and two together. It was still a little before my time, but I mean, I've gone back and I've watched, you know, something like I do know that. But yeah, I honestly didn't put two and two together until you said something. And in a way, I'm kind of glad, because that way I didn't have that connection while I was watching him, because even though I didn't like him on the mic, I did like him in the ring. He definitely had some ring presence and things like that. He just really needs to work on his mic work, like I guess really like the rest of his family. Actually, no. Well, you know what? Scott Steiner, never change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scott Steiner is a wellspring of hilarity. You don't know me, and you don't know what I'm capable of. Cable. You said cable.
A sacrifice.
Scott is one of a kind. Yeah, and then they had...
That was Rob Van Dam.
There was one time... Stop it. There was one time when they had a couple of other Steiner siblings to, like, talk about dissension between Rick and Scott. They gave this one sister one line, and she referred to Rick as Rob. One time... She had to remember that his name was Rick in wrestling, and she didn't. She just went ahead and said Rob. They are what they are. Anyway, Darrell, it seems like it's been a while since we talked to you, so let's check in on you.
Okay. And he looked mostly like Scott. He looked like Scott, but sound like Rick. He looked like an early Scott Steiner back when they used to have the Michigan jackets before Scott got super big and then became Big Papa Pump. So, and one other thing I think everybody forgot, and I think I said something to you guys then back when they did these people. I don't call it a promo. I just call it a line. It's the same type of line they gave Zoe Stark when she first came in, Carmelo Hayes, and they had them jump in with the top of the car immediately. It's just those other few, they lost every time when they jumped in the car with the early few, with the people who was higher in the car. Him right now, he got a win against LA Knight, and probably because LA Knight going. But it's the same push that they gave those people, and eventually after about 4 or 5 weeks, they was able to start putting some of their personality into their characters. And when everybody was doom and gloom about them. So I just want to give it a few weeks and see how they do and see where they go with that. So that's one taking that I always get from that I got from that when I seen it. Now, probably the worst match on the night was the B-Fab match. I felt like they didn't need to have this match. They didn't need to have this. This is going to be another way of trying to continue on with this feud. I know that Erica Lopez can wrestle and stuff like that. I follow on Instagram. I've seen some of her matches that and stuff like that. But I never seen B-Fab wrestle or anything like that. But I think that was the worst match on the card. I think that's something that they didn't have to put and they could have left off. What do you guys think about that? And do you think it will hurt this rivalry if they're trying to implement them in with somebody who might just should be a manager and not a wrestler at this point in time? What do you guys think about all of that?
Well, I was hoping we would get to this 78-second classic earlier than later. B-Fab, as she is called now, not a damn thing wrong with Brianna Brandy, but B-Fab, I don't know, maybe it sounds more like a rap name, although it kind of sounds like a shortened rap name from like a decade or so ago, but it's fine. Versus Katrina Cortez, formerly known as Catalina, who I thought looked extremely green, and all the times we saw her before as Catalina, still under a mask. Why a different name? I don't know. Catalina's got a little more color for me than Katrina Cortez, but whatever. It's not one of the bad names. It's not like Braun Breaker bad. But B-Fab beats Katrina Cortez. This goes into Legado. Del Fantasma showing up on the ramp, dressed better than anyone you know ever. And then they cut a quick promo, B-Fab and Elektra. I'm still getting used to all these new names. Elektra Lopez cut quick promos on one another. And they seemingly will go next week. So we will see what can happen in a longer match with, I'm going to just say, a better opponent than Cortez, who is who's still in the early stages for me. Tom, this has got to be the match you were talking about.
It sure is, and it gives me absolutely no pleasure to say so, because I've been hopeful for whenever Brianna Brandy's first match was going to be, just been curious what in the world she brings to the table once the bell rings, and I don't think she got to show us, and this is really where I take no pleasure, because I don't know, maybe it's just the intangibles that I like about the former Catalina, Katrina Cortez. She did not look good when she was with Unico on Raw. She didn't look good in any of the other things that I've seen her do, but there's just that natural thing about her where she has that Ricky Steamboat thing, which obviously is lofty. But it is that Ricky Steamboat thing where it's like you just look at her and you're like, yeah, I just want her to succeed. I feel like I want her to do well here. And I don't think she gave, even in just such a brief squash, I don't think she gave Brianna anything to work off of. This is the worst showing I've ever seen from Katrina Cortez, especially unfortunate after I don't think I've seen her wrestle in like 2 years or something. Like, I mean, maybe she showed up and got squashed another time. I'm forgetting instead of Rita Reyes, but she's been the designated one for a while. But and then we got Ellie the Dream Girl last week. But last time I remember seeing her wrestle, I think it was against Chelsea Green, and she was actually Catalina was actually maskless. And she had a fun little entrance that she did. I guess she was trying out a new, I don't know about character, but at least different look without the mask and everything. And even in a match against, you know, my personal punching bag, Chelsea Green, I thought it was a pretty good little dark match. It was like, oh, that was actually not bad. There's something here, I think. And none of that was on display in the just over a minute that she got tonight. All of that bashing aside, I will be forgiving, though, because, like I said, this is what I'm here to see. And while this should have been kept off camera, it is a curious starting point. This is the level that we know them to be on now, and it'll be intriguing to see where they go from here, hopefully up. So I'll have my eye on that. And I just thought it was kind of weird that I thought that they were teeing up Lopez Brandy to happen after the break. And even when they went to Carmelo, I think they did something else before. I think they went to a wedding thing.
Yeah, there was the Grimes Odyssey. Yeah, the return of Austin Theory and Damian Priest.
Yeah, I kept on thinking that they were going to go back to Brandy Lopez, just the way they phrased it. I think it was specifically, I guess I've got to force myself to get used to B-Fab. I think it was specifically B-Fab saying, I'm still fresh, and sure, she's just talking herself up for a match that'll happen next week, and I get that now, but they prepped me for seeing Brandy Lopez, and I was like, oh, no wonder that squash was so definitively a squash and did not last very long, because they had something else here. But I'm in favor. I wasn't like super high on the, I think, only one match that we've seen from Electra Lopez so far against Frankie Monet, but I liked her involvement last week after the match with Hayes, right? Yes, with Hayes. And I just think that Legado del Fantasma feuding with Hit Row for as long as they has needed a female contingent. So, you know, right now I'm for it.
I co-sign all of it, especially the part about just wanting to cheer for Catalina. Like, seeing her beat up is like seeing somebody kick in a stained glass window, but you just really, really want to cheer for her. Nathaniel.
I mean, there's a little part of me though that does like watching a stained glass window break. Anyway, not really. You don't want to destroy art.
Evil, this guy. Pure evil.
Well, hey, you know what? PWT NXT 2.0 here. I guess I get a heel turn or something at some point, right?
Yes, finally.
You know, I can't be John Cena my entire career, right? God damn, I can't believe I just compared myself to... So this match...
The only legitimate draw is left in wrestling.
Hey, you know, I might not be in West Newbury, Massachusetts, but I am about 5 miles away. This match with B-Fab here. Now, I don't know if you guys are aware, but she's been B-Fab for like a couple months now.
I've been stubborn about it.
All right. Okay, cool. I just wanted to throw that out there because I was a little curious. Yeah, man, I really had higher hopes for B-Fab than what we saw tonight. Whether it was Katrina or B-Fab here, I don't know. I feel like the last couple times I saw Katrina in the ring, I wasn't super overly impressed, but I'd have to actually go back and either listen to what I said or read, you know, a recap or something. But I just feel like that's what I remember. But at the same time, they're just the way that B-Fab even moved around the ring, you know, she was going for, I think it might have even been a wrist lock at one point, and she was just really kind of clunky with it. I do feel like this probably should have been left off TV. It should have been maybe a dark match before the show, you know, maybe warm the crowd up or something. It just didn't feel like it should have been on the show. And I hate saying that because I want to see, I had higher hopes for her, and I'm, you know, willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it was an off night, whatever. You know, hopefully she'll continue to improve and you kind of come up to the level of the rest of the crew, because everybody else in Hit Row is really good. You know, and I think, you know, I think one of the things Darrell said was, you know, is her performance potentially going to hinder Hit Row? And I don't know. It might, because there are a couple things that I've been thinking of, and, you know, we've talked about them a few times here on the show, where we have all these stables popping up. You know, we've now got a woman in Diamond Mine, which we haven't talked about yet. We've got Electra Lopez here in Legado del Fantasma, part of this segment. You know, now we have B-Fab here with Hit Row, and, you know, we've got War Games coming up, and like, I'm kind of thinking, huh, that might be interesting, seeing like a War Games with three guys and a girl on each team. That'd be kind of, you know. And I've got these things just going through my head, whether or not they do that, who knows? But you know, these kind of things going through my head, and I don't know if they'd necessarily be able to do the same sort of stable on stable warfare that I'm thinking about, if they're even going that route. You know, it kind of feels like they might at some point with just kind of the way that they're popping these stables up, and especially how they're kind of, you know, you get the token female, you get the rest of them are males. I'm kind of wondering if we're going to start seeing some more stable interactions here. Yeah, overall, you know, the match was a little bit underwhelming. After the segment, everything with Legado and Electra Lopez and everything, I was on board with. I definitely want to see some more out of Electra Lopez. I did like what we saw the last time we saw her. I'm on board with that anyway. But as far as this match went, it was definitely disappointing.
You might live 5 miles from John Cena. I live 5 miles from Von Wagner. So you can suck it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was, you know, you talk about how this match shouldn't have made TV. I know that Tom and I saw a lot of matches back then, 8 years back, that probably shouldn't have made TV, but they did, and they were this brief, most of them. Most of them involve Rick Victor in some capacity. I think Tom will agree.
My goodness.
The majority of the early... the early-ish act of I almost called him Apocalypto.
This time it's the Mel Gibson movie. Okay.
I know. Why? They were so important, kind of, for a minute. Sort of. You know, the two guys, Connor and Victor, you know who they were. It doesn't matter, folks. Darrell, let's check in with you because I got a million notes here.
Okay. I got another thing for you guys. I like what they're doing with Carmelo Hayes. It's good to see people who look like you and they have a genuine feel similar to you. And then I like the introduction of Trick. what a name that sounds so familiar. But anyway, and I like that he's playing more like a devil on the shoulder of Carmelo, who was showing to be humble and things of the sort like that. But I'm liking that they bringing in this Trick, because if you're going to, if you would separate them down the way, you already know where they will go. And I like that you have him making him devil on the shoulder type of character, telling him stuff. And I want to see how this progress and how this come full circle. And I like that they came out with Duke Hudson, who's somebody who he defeated and whatever. And then you got to see the devil on the shoulder moment where he tried to tell him, hey, man, let's just go on past, man. He ain't nobody no more. I already beat him. And then all it took was the little push, like, get out, y'all two, get out of my way. And boom, the devil on the shoulder make you do something that you didn't really want to do at first. So I like that. And because, you know, I already got Carmelo Hayes tagged in into maybe challenging for that cruiserweight title, which we've seen later. And if you guys want, you can mix that in too. But what do you guys thought about that whole segment, the devil on the shoulder comment with Trick, and where do you see him cashing in that thing? Will it be a tag team match? Will the devil on the shoulder make him do a tag team match, or will it be the cruiserweight?
So, Trick Williams, real name, Matrick Belton, played football for, I want to say, South Carolina. Ripped to the gills, this guy. This segment was iffy for me in the moment and is growing on me in time, because I can see so many interesting places for it to go. I feel like they're jerking around the intent of Carmelo Hayes a lot early on, but in a developmental setting, that's what you do with somebody when you don't know exactly what you have with them. So I get it. In the short term, it seems weird that this scene seemingly exists to have Carmelo and Trick say that they're going to
Like, they're literally announcing that they're going to be arrogant, which is a weird thing for an ostensible babyface act to do, especially when they attack Duke Hudson, another one of the best guys at gaining genuine heel heat. I, too, think it's hilarious that his name is Trick, a guy who looks like a pimp. Seems like he wouldn't want to be called Trick, but there you are. Hayes and Trick Williams, I think I like what was done here based on where this could go. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm typing so much, trying to keep up with Trick Williams and all the things he's saying. I didn't think of this, but absolutely he could goad Carmelo Hayes into a tag team championship match. That wasn't even in the playbook. That's not something we even thought was on the table. Like, we've all been talking about North American makes sense because it seems like he could slot there, but he's also got the issue with Kushida. It seems like he could slot there, but now it really does seem like he could talk Carmelo into this, and then maybe Trick Williams becomes a feud partner of Carmelo Hayes, and that's Carmelo has to overcome his friend before he starts moving up. So what I thought was maybe an iffy segment, man, you got some options there, don't you? Tom?
I line up with you, if not exactly, just quite closely here, and I agree that it is something I'm going to need more time on, not just to try to pick which title Hayes is going after, an answer that could be different every week at this point, but just, you know, this new Trick Williams relationship, this segment, I agree, it was iffy in the moment, but even over the course of the segment itself, even before it was over with, it took me on a journey of feeling like I was seeing what they were doing. Like, I have it in my notes, but the first thing I wrote after the name Samantha Irvin doing the in-ring interview, I was like, oh boy, I got to write down another name. Here we go. I just wrote, Hayes doesn't need this. And what I meant was that, like, I'm already kind of chuckling at the fact that, like, Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel are, like, the grizzled veterans in their own tag match, when just 2-3 years ago they were working Coconut Loop and working dark matches. And, like, I was looking at, like, we all liked Ike. There's a throwback for you. And I was looking at Bartel doing his dark matches, and I was like, you know, if he drops some of what he's doing, he's pretty enough that he could be the new Tyler Breeze. And, you know, looking at him as that sort of, like, developmental ball of clay. And now, like, you know, so I'm already chuckling about that. And then they're bringing in Carmelo Hayes to this, you know, to 2.0 with this new guy next to him. And it's like, now he's the veteran that's giving the Han Solo to Rey rub to, like, we accept Rey because Han Solo said she was okay. Like, Hayes is the one, the guy, the breakout winner who we've only been seeing for a couple months here. He's the old NXT vet that's, you know, ushering in Trick Williams. And then Hayes starts saying that he, what was he saying? He was saying, oh yes, he was saying that there's a target on his back. And I'm thinking, like, okay, he's not done talking yet, but no, there's not. Like, maybe you interpret it that way, but there's not a target on your back. You're the one holding the golden shot, and everybody, you know, all the titles around you are the targets, dude. And then Trick got on the mic, and I didn't love all of it, but he talked in just one little bit. He talked Hayes into realizing that he doesn't have a target on the back, on his back. He's the one with the opportunity. He's the one with the power in his hands. And so then Carmelo, well, I forget whether Williams called Hayes this or whether Hayes called himself this, but he called himself the chosen one. And I just keep that. That is a great heel line. And as they're leaving, and I'm like, okay, applause, you brought me there. I like where I think this is heading. Duke comes out, and they beat him down just because they can. I like, exclamation point on what I was already liking about it. So yes, Rocky segment, but I am very optimistic here.
Nate, turning tricks.
All right. So I honestly liked the segment. The one thing that I will say is Trick Williams, I didn't quite understand the name Trick, but once he said his name was Matrick, that now makes sense. I actually enjoyed the segment. Now, Carmelo Hayes, one of the things that I've been saying is, like, I wanted to see some more mic work out of him. The few things that we saw, he kind of just seemed bland. He didn't really get a whole lot for us to really sink our teeth into. And tonight I felt like, he certainly did. I won't reiterate a lot of what Tom just said because, that Tom just said it. But I really liked that whole story and bringing Trick into this fold. I got more of a vibe of like him just bringing a buddy in than like the mentor thing. But I don't know. I might have misinterpreted a couple things as well. Cause obviously type in the hits and misses and at the time Corbin wanted to play. However, I did really enjoy the segment. I thought Carmelo Hayes, like I say, he really came off. He came off just much more polished than I think he has in the past. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes with that. What I did not think of at all was the whole tag team title thing. I really like that idea. I think that, and one of the things that I mentioned in the hits and misses, which I don't have out yet. I'll have out for you guys in the morning. I want to finish up a couple of my thoughts before I get it up on the site. But one of the things that I said there is with all of these new tag teams that have been showing up, like the Creed brothers, and tonight, we had Briggs and Jensen, and we've got some other tag teams showing up. I feel like there might be a little bit more of a focus on the tag team division here. So I wouldn't mind seeing another tag team like that. And I feel like the two of them, they have some great chemistry together. They seem like they can play off of each other pretty well. The act I think was a little bit rough. And there were times where, especially Trick Williams, there were times where he felt like he forgot his lines. He repeated a line twice, which I don't think he was supposed to. I think he just said it again because he didn't know what else to say. I'm not sure, but that's the way it came off to me. And it also just, it seemed like he was, albeit excitedly and animatedly, he was just kind of reciting, what he was supposed to be saying, reciting lines is kind of how it came off to me. But I feel like that's kind of just a little bit of a nitpick. He just kind of needs to work on that a little bit. And I think he'd be a lot better, much, much better. There was one other thing that I wanted to, getting back to the tag team thing. I would like to see that. I think those two were entertaining tonight, and I'd like to see them kind of a little bit more play off of each other, and then use this because I don't think any of, like Kelly said, none of us are thinking tag team. Why not use this opportunity to win tag team gold and entertain us there.
There you go, and maybe at some point I'll remember who the tag team champions are because the tag team championships both have been kind of
wow.
Big,
I can't think of it either.
Background props. Isn't it weird we're talking about that? And I'm like, I don't know. It's probably the Ascension.
They were on the show tonight.
The Ascension? That's amazing.
the show would have been a lot better if that was the case.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna
MSK.
Yes, MSK.
I legit had to look it up. I could not remember who the tag team champions were.
They were at a wedding. I've been mostly remembering, but didn't this time. Darrell, let's check in on you one more time.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to go on what I've been seeing a lot of people on Twitter say probably – they were saying maybe best wedding. I don't know, but it seemed like a lot of people was liking it, especially people who were just tuning in for the first time to check out this. And I thought it was clever. I liked it. I liked when he opened the coat and he showed the axe because, he's an axe murderer or some type of murderer. He's Dexter or whatever. So, but I liked everything about it. It was intriguing. It kept my attention. I understand why they had to put it on last. It didn't play out where you had someone come and interrupt and you don't get the conclusion that you think you should get. So everything about it was nice and intriguing. And after the bachelor party last week, that was kind of funny and well for me. I liked this. What do you guys think about the whole the wedding portion of it, from the choking out the the priest or whatever to trying to egg on the general William Regal to come up there and finish it, and to all of it, to even the zombie Ralph showing his face one more time? How did you guys like it? And that's all for me.
Thanks, as always, Darrell. In this new era, we had a main event wedding, folks. A lot of wrestling fans, and this goes back for as long as the internet's been around, who are just like, why are there so many weddings in wrestling? I hate to say this, but they do better ratings than just about anything. Like, basically every promoted wedding in wrestling has done numbers, all of them. So that's why they do them. So whether you think this is too cheesy for you or not, that is the purpose of them. That is why this warranted the main event segment. And your championship match was 10 minutes, 38 seconds long, and Ciampa didn't even get to celebrate. We had a setup scene for this beforehand, with Cora Jade wanting to wear her hat down, and then Candice LeRae makes her take her hat off. By the way, that hat looks awesome on Cora Jade. I want to keep that on her forever. I'm going to talk a lot about Cora Jade in the coming weeks, I think. I just think she's wonderful.
I'm in favor of that.
Awesome. Yes. Massive fan of Cora Jade. It's going to be like a Dakota Kai level, I want the world for her sort of thing. But anyway, yes, wedding. This was, they had characters acting within themselves, even though they had them on a very heightened version of themselves. Can see this being too much for a lot of folks. I can see this being exactly right for a lot of folks. I have predictions for both of you idiots. And
I was going to ask.
I'm ready to hear what you think, because there were so many little moments in this, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. But I was overall fairly bullish on this. I thought that this wedding would actually happen. I did not think that this would be one, and they even played with expectation. They had characters in kayfabe say this won't happen, but why won't it happen? Let's put money on why this won't happen, and a million reasons why it couldn't have. And you can say maybe it's not worth the idiocy to have everybody raise their hand and try to object and have Loomis show his axe, but I think nobody even treats that kind of moment as canon, so it doesn't matter a week from now. But if there's no angle here, then what's it worth? But having Loomis say I do ended up for me being worth it, because I'm typing everything and I'm nonstop typing because so many little things are happening, even with minor characters. Andre Chase reminding us he exists, which I didn't remember. But then I thought he might say it, but they indeed have Dexter say I do, and I ate it up. I thought it was a wonderful, great way to have him say his first words, and I think these two together have legs. It's absolutely benefiting both of them, who I think are struggling in their own divisions without each other, but with each other, this is just a weird marriage. You put Road Dogg and Billy Gunn together because they're not doing anything. And then maybe magic happens. And this isn't that yet, but I think that these two are greater than the sum of their parts. I too enjoyed The Wedding for as much as it was, and it didn't try to be too much. It'll be whatever for a lot of people, but for me, it was, I enjoyed it. Nate?
I too enjoyed it. Now there were some things that I liked and some things that I didn't like. There was, some of the humor was even a little too weird for me. But that said, I still really enjoyed it. The one thing I didn't like was Andre Chase standing up. However, that did set up for Odyssey Jones to stand up and kind of shove him down, make him sit back in his seat, which I did kind of like that because it was showing like Odyssey Jones, like, hey, dude, this is a wedding, show some respect, sit down. And that kind of shows some character development for Odyssey Jones, which I liked. So I guess it's okay. But excuse me one second. The rest of it I did actually enjoy. Now I was wondering myself if this would actually happen. I was kind of thinking it might. Usually wrestling weddings don't actually happen. You don't actually go through with it. And something goes on and there's drama and all that stuff. Sometimes they do but a lot of times they don't. And I was expecting this one, or I was kind of thinking that, this one might actually happen. And when they started doing some of those teases that it might, it kind of almost made me think it was going to happen a little bit more. And I too popped when he said, I do. It's actually funny that you brought up a couple members of DX, because one of the moment that it immediately sprung to mind for me was when X-Pac actually had Kane take the voice box up to his throat and he was like,
Socket.
That was the moment that it immediately invoked for me. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm really, really wondering how they play this off here from what kind of happens. Like, I'm assuming Candice LeRae is probably going to stick around for a little while in a non-wrestling role, before she goes off on maternity leave here. So I'm assuming she'll be around for a little bit, unless this was her swan song here with the wedding angle. But I'm assuming we'll probably see her at least for a few more weeks. But I'm kind of curious to see what happens from here, what they're going to have Index do together. Are we going to see some mixed tag team wrestling? Are they going to start pushing one or the other and have one of them be kind of a manager? I don't know. Or are they going to kind of get involved with the way? I'm kind of thinking that might even be a little bit more the way they go, is kind of have kind of some more interworkings with the way and some more inner turmoil there. Although that kind of assumes that Austin Theory sticks around. I don't know if he's going to necessarily stay around, if he was just a one-time, one-off thing tonight, which could certainly be the case, which honestly, it was kind of cool to see Damian Priest back on NXT too. Talking about him actually last night quite a bit with Zach Hadorn, and Priest is somebody that I feel like WWE has a really high ceiling for. They have a lot of faith in him as almost kind of like a Miz type guy, not necessarily as like a in the ring Miz type guy, but like a company guy, I guess, better way to put it. That feeling they kind of have a lot, a lot of faith in him. It was cool to see Damian Priest show up for the wedding. The one thing that I was a little, I could have done without, and I guess in a way it was kind of a character moment, but I don't know. I guess I kind of almost wished that Beth Phoenix would have just kind of offered to officiate the wedding from the get-go, because she had so much involvement with this angle altogether, just from kind of talking to Indy Hartwell at first and then, having little conversations at ringside and always being in their corner. It was cool for that moment, in the middle of the segment for her to just, hey, by the way, I went online and got ordained a minister. It's cool for that shock value, but I wish there was maybe a little bit more build to that. Granted,
I thought that was worth it in the moment because she was like, I thought something like this would happen. Like, I've seen wrestling.
I know it was just,
yeah.
it was just a little too contrived for me. Like, I totally hear you, and I think it was, you know, there's
well,
a lot
Johnny
of people that are...
Johnny called it out because you heard Johnny, right? He was like, well, that's convenient. That's really convenient.
No, no, exactly,
because obviously
exactly.
It's like plot convenience playhouse.
Yeah,
Johnny's
yeah,
comments were great. Beth said something about, like, till death do you part, hopefully of natural causes and not, like, axe murder, and then you hear Johnny go, yeah, I hope so, I hope so. So, Nate, would it have been better if Beth, instead of being ordained, had said, oh, by the way, I'm a notary public, so I can do this? Because that's what ran through my mind. I was like, I'm jumping over this hurdle with you, absolutely. For the sake of the moment, I am. But
yeah.
Notary Public was right there. But I don't know. When she said the name of the website, that saved it, I think.
Well, what I was about to say was, like, if they, like, the last couple of weeks or something like that, they kind of built to it. However, what I was about to say is they – obviously the last few weeks were taped. So if this was an idea that they had in the last couple of weeks, they obviously – it might have been kind of hard to get that idea out there. So I can kind of see, like, you know, I'm okay with it. It's just, I don't know. I think for me, it might have just been a little bit more, like, quote, sentimental or whatever if she just offered to do it from the get-go. But it did make for a cool moment in the segment and all that. It's more of a nitpick than anything. But overall, I did enjoy it. I'm along for the ride here. I'm along for the ride with this. I started off hating this index thing, and now it's one of my favorite things from week to week.
Thomas.
So I want to hear the predictions. What did you think we were going to think? I know last week you thought that if Nate had been on the show, he probably would have, like, spontaneously combusted from excitement over the Bachelor segment.
Which
oh,
I
yeah.
Did.
Yep. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah, I was sure he would love that. My
the one
prediction.
Thing that the one thing that I hated was the zombie ref. Other than that, loved it.
That's what I liked most about it. Because they finally provided a reason and just said, like, I'm not canon. I'm just a dude pretending to be a zombie ref. Easily my favorite part of it. I predicted that Nate would be bullish on this and Tom would be a mixed bag.
Did he say I'm not canon? Or no, did somebody say you're
he
not
He didn't
canon?
Say he wasn't canon, but he broke character to say something. So it's like,
okay.
Oh, he's just a dude pretending to be a zombie.
Okay. I didn't pick
I
up on that.
I thought he
either.
Said he was from Canada.
No, I didn't say he's not canon. He's not a real zombie in canon is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, Nate, I didn't like the zombie either. But tonight, I think that this segment – being on the show and the stuff leading up to it that's to account for the missed wrestling minutes. So I'm not blaming anything else it's too much to call it a restructuring, I think. And I do think that this was the rightful main event because they've been promoting it for a long time. The title match was a contenders match and they had to change some things due to the injury. So I still feel like leaving the wedding for last was where it needed to be. And I thought this wedding was pitch perfect. I loved it. As down as I was on the bachelor party last week, what I failed to say about it amongst my criticisms was that Gargano and Loomis bonding through it, even though I didn't enjoy the segment, them bonding to the point where Gargano seemed genuinely like, you know what, this guy's all right, by the end, got me to a point where I genuinely wanted to see the rest of the wedding go off without a hitch. I wanted it to be Savage Elizabeth main eventing SummerSlam, which deserved to be there too, even though it was main eventing a major pay-per-view.
That was an amazing build, by the way, a match made in heaven, a match made in hell.
Oh yes.
God,
I forgot that they added that. What was the match made in hell? It was Hogan.
Yeah,
versus...
I mean, it wasn't a good match, but it was Hogan and Warrior against Slaughter, Adnan, and it was 2 versus 3, and it was like
okay.
The Iraqi sympathizer stuff. Slaughter, Adnan, and Mustafa. Yeah,
even further along in the 90s timeline than I recalled. But yeah, they got me to a point in the storyline where just as a viewer removing analysis from it, this is what I wanted to see. And it was even more entertaining than what I thought we were going to see, which of course there was going to be some goofy the way humor in it, but this is probably the best example of it yet. They involved so many other people who, like you said, Kelly, were all working their characters. They were getting their own stuff over. Andre Chase, I agree, completely forgot the dude existed, and now he has a character? Somebody says the word Chase, and he stands up like a nerd, like, did somebody say Chase? It's like, obviously nobody's talking about you, but I thought that was hilarious, and now I at least have one thing to perhaps like, but at least remember about that dude.
And that was another Gargano thing. No, nobody said Andre Chase. Nobody said that at all.
Yeah. They had a mic on him for sure. But then, like, I agree. Like, I have no idea why everybody raised their hands to object. But then Dexter Lumis literally threatening to murder all of them if they objected was the best thing that he's done. And I think I liked it even better than him saying, I do, speaking for the first time. And there are so many other little things. I mean, the video package I thought was also pitch perfect. The use of R&B, the use of the commentators quibbling with one another over how to perceive what was happening. I thought it really hit the tone just right. I just thought they nailed this. I could list so many other things, like every single little bit that they threw in there, and they threw in a lot. Every single little bit worked for me. Everything I thought was amusing, everything I felt added to it. I think when the priest got taken out, which also was just hilarious to me, that Loomis choked out the priest. That's just so funny conceptually. I mean, that's how good this is that I'm glowing over a Dexter Lumis segment. That's how good this has all been. Like you said, they're elevating the key players here. But after that guy gets choked out, I too really liked the Damian Priest cameo earlier, and it got me to the point where, even though this entire time I've been thinking Beth has to be involved in some way, in some major way in the ceremony, in the moment I forgot that, of course, that had to be her spot, because I was thinking Damian Priest is going to come out and do it, and why the heck not? Why the heck not? So I really thought that they couldn't have done a better job with this. I thought it was fantastic.
That officiant comes out, and we've never seen him before. So I'm like, how are they going to murder this older officiant guy? And then he puts the silencer on him, and I'm like, well, it seems so obvious now. You put a sleeper hold on the old guy.
And of course, most weddings end with the breakup, and that's the storyline you go with. But now they have me curious, like, how do they move forward with these characters now that they are – I mean, they've been a tandem, but now they are – a tandem. You're not just going to break them up next week, right? So I'm very, you know, of the many things that I am finally, for the first time in a long time, looking forward to the next week of TV for. This is maybe at the top of the list to see how they perpetuate this.
Kevin Catani emails us, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well. Wowee, if that wasn't the wedding of the century, I don't know what is. I loved every minute of the build and popped hard for Dexter's I Do. That said, I was actually quite pleased with the episode. There was a fantastic mix of established talent and new faces. Existing storylines continued to develop, and new ideas are already taking shape, all capped with Ciampa reclaiming Goldie, which excites me greatly. For all my nervous anticipation over the speculation of what could have been, I'm cautiously optimistic of this new direction. What do you foresee for Ciampa's title reign, and why do you think Raquel was left off the episode? Thanks as always. Go VIP and watch 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin Picatani, PhD. Ciampa's title reign, I think, will be brief. And what do I think of Raquel being left off the episode? She also was last week. Last week, it could be a lot of things because there was a big taping. This week, I think it's because minutes were precious and they tried to get over the things they got over. I also think that they don't feel the need to cover Raquel a lot because she might be a fast track to the main roster. Let's talk the ladies. Kacy and Kayden versus Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. When Mandy Rose didn't come out here, you knew
that that there was going to be more to this. This particular 2 vs. 2 went for 151. Casey and Caden win by disqualification when Mandy Rose makes the save. They teased some great big change for Mandy Rose. That change was hair dye. She's now, she's got dark hair. She's got black cutoff pants and a black top. The blacks don't match, which kind of sucks, but what are you going to do? This is from Sean O'Hearn. Evening, y'all. First question I have is, are they still doing NXT from the CWC, or did they move locations because it looked like they slapped the ring right in the middle of a roller skating rink? Next thing, I have enjoyed B-Fab overall since her debut, and it was nice to finally see her wrestle for what it was. With this rebranding they're doing with NXT, I really hope they give her the ring time. She's got the mic skills. Now what can she do in the ring? Time will tell. On another note, Mandy Rose as a brunette, I'm all for it. Reminds me of Trish Stratus. Solid women's tag match overall. I always enjoy Casey and Caden in the ring. One of my favorite teams. One more question. With Kyle O'Reilly being removed from the match due to injury, and with the draft coming up, could this be his call up to the main roster? Or will he start a feud with Ridge Holland and or Pete Dunne? Anyway, I'm sending this as the Holland match has ended, so you gentlemen have a great night, and thanks for the great content as always. And Nate, I want to give a shout out to Corbin. He always makes me laugh when he chimes in. Thanks again, y'all, and take care. Yeah, with Kyle, I think this is a longer-term story in NXT, because they did put some effort into his NXT promo talking about the NXT championship. I don't think it's over in NXT for him. Mandy Rose reminding you of Trish Stratus is something. I get it. She changed her hair color too. She also went from a bad wrestler to a good one, and Mandy has not done that. So the opening match was that. Then it went to Saray against Casey and Caden versus Mandy Rose against Mandy Rose and Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. That one went about 6.5 matches, 6.5 minutes, which would be the second longest match on the show. But I don't know exactly how long it went because it started during the break. Mandy gets the pin to, I don't know, do whatever they're doing with her. But on the women, all six of these women have something to do, and that's great. I really, really am high on Gigi Dolan specifically, not so much on JC or Mandy or honestly as much as anybody in this match, although I think Casey and Caden, if kept together, could be real interesting. And even apart, they could do some real interesting things. And Saray is growing on me, but I forget about her after she's not on screen, Tom.
So I've been talking around the my points on the title match, the NXT title match, just so I don't kill them all before we finally get to it. But on Kyle, I did think it was smart to remove him, you know, just under the circumstance of having to make the last minute change due to Joe's injury. This was not a match that Kyle was going to win when it was a contendership match, and when it's actually made for the title, you don't want him losing yet another title shot. He's been doing that for a year, but also because he's been doing that for a year, this is a built-in, not built-in, they've been working this long journey for him. So he can't just win it on like, oh, we made the contender match a title match, you know, good luck. He can't win it like that. So the journey continues as it should for him. Casey and Lacey versus JC and Geege plus Saray and Mandy, the Pac-Man ghosts, plus Mrs. Pac-Man. And if you beat the game, they have a baby, and I named it Pac-Prika when I was a kid. So that's canon to me, Pac-Prika. I really liked this match, and it was a six-person match, and I like never like those. So what's going on? Like, the last time I think I liked a six-person match was the Shield versus a bunch of guys who seemed over the hill but turned out not to be at the time, in Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show at WrestleMania. Yeah, I do not share. I haven't pushed back too strong because it's not really worth it for Mandy Rose. But in this case, I will push back just that I'm not going to say she's great, but I don't share the negative opinion of Mandy Rose. I think she's fine. And the only flaw in the presentation here, I think it was definitely deliberate that I compared the hair color changing to how I was interpreting a lot of what NXT is doing from last week to this. But I felt like it was a missed opportunity to work the drop kick from Saray, seeming like we think it's disfigured her face, or we think that it broke her nose and she's going to start doing the face mask gimmick or something. I felt they could have worked that a little more and still gone to just the hair color change, because the hair color change seems like it's a big deal for the character, and that makes sense for Mandy Rose. Changing her hair color is a big deal to her, along with, yes, visually signaling to the audience that it's a new phase of her career, Mandy Rose 2.0. But I feel like because it was just like, oh, she's got something new now, and boom, there's the reveal in the typical NXT pedal to the metal thing, seem like it's a lame reveal. If they had built it up to be something more and then had the reveal and then commentary is like, seriously, that's it? I feel like that would have worked more in sort of not the exact same thing that Eva Marie is doing on the main roster, but sort of in that vein. So I am in favor of the hair color change. And I thought Rose did fine in the match, better than fine. I thought she was good in this match. And I thought, unless I was paying it, you know, unless my mind was on the wrong things and Saray worked this whole segment that just did not stick in my memory, I feel like most of what Saray did was stand on the apron and then come in for the big spot of doing her drop kick. And that's great for her right now. I don't think she's amazing, but that drop kick is something. So having her do that, you know, gradually increases her stock in my mind, because you're showing me what is good about her and hiding the rest and working on that. And Saray versus Mandy Rose, I don't think is where anybody expected either of those people to be right now, even just a handful of weeks ago, but even more recently than that. But it feels like a feud where the two of them can elevate one another. It was definitely my favorite match on the show, and it's probably my second favorite thing on the entire show behind the wedding. I actually ended up being very high on this.
My favorite match on the show was the Creed Brothers, because the Creed Brothers were in it, but this was good. Awesome chant, which it wasn't, but before this had been 30 minutes of vignettes preceded by B-Fab versus Katrina Cortez. So, you know, yeah, this is awesome chant. It makes sense. Nate, what did you think?
So I was a little bit disappointed when the match between Casey Catanzaro and Gigi Dolan and JC Jane got interrupted by Mandy Rose and, you know, following with the run-in with Saray. I really just kind of wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see those two teams kind of go at it, because those are two teams I'm really high on. Talking about what I was talking with last night with Zach, we started talking about the women's tag team division, both in NXT as well as WWE. And I specifically pointed out Casey and Caden Carter, I think I brought up Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. If I didn't, I meant to, but I think I did. And I specifically brought up these two teams. So I wanted to see these guys go at it and kind of have a little bit more character work and whatever. I was a little bit disappointed when that happened. However, I will agree, I actually enjoyed the six-person match. I wasn't expecting to. I will also admit I did not like the fact that it just cut to commercial and then we come back, oh, it's a triple six-man tag, because that's very main rostery, and it's a little bit nerve-wracking to me. It's not something we typically see on WWE, on NXT rather, where it just they cut to commercial. And now it's a six-man or six-woman in this case. that's something we see all the time on the main roster. And I don't want to see a lot of those main roster tropes start showing up on NXT. Granted, I guess if we're kind of starting to make this become Little Raw and Little SmackDown, maybe it makes more sense, but whatever, I'm going to be stubborn with that one anyway. So that's my only real nitpick about it. I wish there was maybe, you know, William Regal just came out and said something before the commercial or after the commercial or something like that, rather than just insinuating it. But whatever is what it is. I enjoyed the match. Saraya is also starting to grow on me a little bit as well, but I still feel like she's got a little bit more to go here. I did notice, too, that they kind of kept her out of a lot of things until a little bit later on, just so she could get her moves in, get her dropkick in, which I did like. It's kind of protecting her and only showing off the things that she can show off and not – it's protecting her. It's not exposing her, I guess is really what I'm trying to say. Certainly like that. Mandy Rose, I'm in between both you guys. I really don't care. I that's really how I feel about Mandy Rose. She's okay. I don't necessarily think she's the worst wrestler in the world. I'm not really down on her. But I'm not really high on her either. She's just there. I'm curious to see what this, you know, new brunette hair thing work, you know, is for her. Obviously, it's a new phase of her career. One of the easiest things you can do just to kind of signal it's a new phase of career is a change of the hair. So whatever, cool, fine with it. I hope that this change makes me start caring about her, because I want to care about the wrestlers in the ring, whether they're, you know, heel, face, I don't care. I want to be on that journey with them. So please make me care about you, Mandy. But the people that the two that I really was looking at in this match were really Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. Not that I wasn't looking at everybody else, but where these two are fairly new to the brand, at least not necessarily wrestling, but to the brand, I kind of keep my eye on these two a little bit more. And, I agree. I think, Gigi Dolan especially is really the one to keep your eye on. Obviously on the indies, she definitely excelled. I really like what we see there out of her. So, I was high on this segment as well. There was one other thing that I wanted to say, and I completely forget at this point, so I will just go back to you.
You say Mandy Rose is just okay. Man, I wish he was that good. Let's go to the other men's matches before we go to the main event of the show. Drake Maverick loses to Ridge Holland in 149. I don't think we'll cover that at all.
I didn't even take notes on it. It's nowhere in.
There is no need.
Oh, my gosh.
We're not covering it. If either of you mentions it, you're fired from the podcast.
Okay.
Nate, be careful here.
All I was going to say was literally what I wrote in the hits and misses. This match is exactly what you'd expect. Ridge Holland absolutely destroyed Drake Maverick.
All right.
That's it.
That's true. Fired, but that's true. So let's go. Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs against Imperium. Imperium wins this in 355. I liked this match. Jensen and Briggs did a lot of cool power stuff that hints at a better future for them. The audience sucked for this. Stop being gatekeepers. You're not interesting. Creed Brothers beat Enhancements that were unnamed in 249. The big story here is Malcolm Bivens comes out and he introduces Ivy Niles. She is legit from a build standpoint. She looks terrifying. And I hope that that her work in the ring is just as terrifying. I don't remember her real name. Emily Inza, Tom will help me out.
I'm going to say Anzulis, but it's probably either a more complex or more generic pronunciation than that.
Go ahead and take it away from here.
Okay, sure. Well, Briggs and Brooks sounds better, but Briggs and Jensen, Josh and Jensen. Oh boy, the J's and the B's are in the wrong places. But I have not been impressed with what I have seen from Josh Briggs since he finally has gotten on TV. And this is a guy that I was expecting a lot more from. So I think that putting him in a tag team, assuming this is going to be a tag team, and it wasn't just these two guys thrown together for one show. I think it's the right place for him right now. This is the dumbest reason ever, but I am optimistic for Ben Buchanan, Brooks Jensen, simply because it feels like a throwback to NXT 8 years ago. It just feels like this is exactly the kind of like loaf of white bread person who's just there because he's the son of somebody who was around in the 90s.
Or just a famous person unrelated. We're going to find out that Brooks Jensen is like a cousin of the Baldwins. We absolutely are.
There you go. So just because of the family relation there, I'm interested in what Brooks Jensen is going to bring. And I already mentioned my silly thing about Marcel Bartel. It's just funny to look at Bartel in particular, but Bartel and Eichner kind of being in like the veteran role here. Not that they don't live up to it, but just, you know, we've been watching, so it's funny. The Creed brothers. Hell yeah. This is like one of the reasons why you tune into NXT every week is to see them. And now it's been 2 weeks in a row, so we probably won't get a match next week. Hopefully we'll get some Diamond Mine follow up, but, they made such a great impression last week. It's awesome to see them again this week. I felt like the unnamed jobbers, I felt like I recognized the main dude who took all of the offense, and the other guy was just like, yeah, no, I don't want any. And it's going to continue to drive me crazy until somebody sends me a DM or something. I feel like I've seen him before, but I just cannot place the name, probably on some local show. I think I'm probably reaching here, but at this early point of only having seen these guys in the ring twice, I'm going to say that Brutus, talk about your awful names, Brutus Creed and Julius Creed, just terrible. Like they are really outworking their names. And I've taught myself to be okay with renaming, because every time you rename someone, it sounds awful at first because it's new and you're not used to it. But anyway, Brutus and Julius, terrible. And Creed, I mean, come on, overdone, but whatever. Brutus, the one who worked first and looks more Brock Lesnar-ish. To me, he already feels like the star of the duo. He's the one that I want to see in there. Like, it's probably a good thing that I'm differentiating the two already, that I can tell them apart. Yeah, they've got different hair colors and slightly different builds, but, you know, they wear the same gear.
And I was wrong. I thought that Brutus was going to be more lost in there, and for some reason I had Julius pegged as the one that was going to really, really be interesting. And he's got some good stuff. He's got a good overhead is it a double underhook? He's got a few good suplexes. But Brutus, he goes in there. He's unassuming. He's baby-faced. And he's like, no, I'm going to murder you. It's murder. Yeah. He's wonderful.
I agree with every single word of that, going into it and watching it and coming out of it the other side. I totally right there with you. So, you know, we'll keep watching. I do think it's funny that they've got a Steiner Brothers tag team in these guys on the same show where they're introducing a literal Steiner. And then, yeah, Emily Anzulis, or however that name is pronounced, it's probably just like Anzulis, and that's it. But Ivy Nile, sure, whatever, that's a better renaming, and even if it wasn't, we would get used to it, just like we got used to Aleister Black and whatever Adam Cole's name should have been, because that was going to be a problem. But, you know, whatever, that's been on my mind lately. It was weird when they brought him in and didn't change it, and it's weird that it's just weird. But where am I in my notes? Yeah, I think that since the last time I saw her, whatever's going on with her hair, her outfit, whatever it is, it's an improved look. It's not like they slapped a new outfit on somebody that we're used to seeing, and it's like, oh, I'm going to get used to that now, I guess. I think she looks better than the last time we saw her, so this is a good, like, showing her off for the first time to most people. She is still, to me, unproven in the ring, though. I've never seen her work. I don't think anybody, except for people who work at the PC, or maybe she's done a dark match for people who are risking going to those tapings. She's totally unproven in the ring, so very, very curious how that will turn out. Was there one other thing?
I saw that she did a Raw match.
and in a 2v3, and was on the same side as Marina Shafir and somebody else who has an MMA background.
Okay.
That's all I saw. And, but was wrestling as Emily and Zulis. So I don't know.
All right. Was there one more segment we were talking about, or was that it?
That was it for now.
Okay.
Nathaniel.
All right. So let's see. The Creed brothers. I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to add from what you guys have already said. I'm really on board with these guys. Very, extremely athletic, incredibly hard hitting. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add that, isn't really repetitive. Because to be completely honest with you, Zach and I went really long last night and I am fading fast. What else were we talking about? There was that, and then Imperium Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen. I dug those guys as well, Briggs and Jensen. Like Tom was saying, you know, I kind of wasn't super impressed with Josh Briggs myself. So I'm curious to see how he does in tag team contention here. I seem to like him here tonight. I also like Brooks Jensen. And yes, the crowd, I agree, was terrible for this. Like when Jensen did that like flip thing, you know, cause he was kind of seated in the corner, the turnbuckle there, and then did that flip up to the top rope. That was incredible. And nobody did anything. Nobody clapped even. Like, that was awesome. You don't see that very often. I mean, and it's not like
this is a crowd full of gatekeepers. They suck.
Oh no, exactly. They suck. Yeah. So, you know, whatever. I was really high on those guys. Yeah. And again, I don't have anything that to say that you guys already haven't. So let's just keep this ball rolling so I can go to bed.
Let's indeed. Oh man, it was going to be my turn last night. And it was mentioned to me, and I was like, what could possibly happen on Raw?
Oh, I stole your turn?
Everything could happen on Raw.
Oh, Kelly, don't you dare feel sour.
Fired. You're fired. Okay, let's talk the main event wrestling match. Tommaso Ciampa versus some guy named Wagner, Von Wagner, versus LA Knight versus Pete Dunne. I think we're all in agreement. We've seen this before, but even more than ever, now that nobody's being asked to anchor, I don't think people are going to be asked to anchor NXT as a brand for the most part. And in the absence of that, I don't think there's any reason to keep Knight down there, like at all, even just in comparison to last week. Tommaso Ciampa wins this match, wins Goldie. Honestly, when they started talking about Goldie again, I was like, oh, they really might be leaning that way. But indeed, that's the way they went. They had a few, several near falls for everyone. You could tell this was going to go short because they started hitting their finishers 5 minutes in, which, I feel like you could have cut a few things to make this a few minutes longer and made it seem a little more important. Certainly, you should linger on Ciampa winning the championship because otherwise, why do you even have it? But Ciampa wins this championship. Is he three-time now? Is he
two?
Is it two? Is it just two?
Yeah, Joe was the only three.
Okay, I thought maybe he matched Joe and they should have mentioned that, but apparently it's just two, and I couldn't remember that for sure. But yes, Ciampa wins in a match where, you know, it's 10:38. We see about 7 minutes of that because there's a commercial in there, and nothing wrong with it, but yes, they didn't show us as much as we want. I guess we did also see the Tony D'Angelo thing, which I really was hoping that I dreamed, but I didn't based on these emails. This is from Michael McGivern.
Legit LOL that the debut vignette of a guy doing a Chicago Italian mob gimmick, and he proudly mentions he went to the University of Buffalo. If your shtick is your Al Capone's great nephew, why on earth would you say he went to a mid-major school in upstate New York? I hate that this has turned into minor league Raw. Edward Sledek says, good evening, KTN. I've never called this KTN, but I can roll with that. I'm not an NXT diehard. I'm in and out. It wasn't all bad, but it just felt very blah. The set looks like a game show or 80s, 90s talk show set. I like that it's not so dark, the white ropes and blue mat, but the crowd seems so far away, way too much color, and didn't feel like big-time wrestling. This is weird because I thought the crowd seemed closer because the lack of the plexiglass. I literally thought they felt closer, and it's weird that people are so split on this. Interested in Steiner, there will be growing pains in terms of the wrestling and production. Way too much NXT 2.0, and there's some irony that WWE released a team that's now in AEW called 2.0. I don't really have an interest in watching NXT, but with the right talent, it would draw me in. Steiner might be a guy, but we sure have a long way to go till there. Thanks, Ed from High Desert, California. That is all our emails. Thank you. That is PW Torch. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. Is that right?
It is. It still, I say it every time, it never, ever rolls off the tongue, but that is the one.
It doesn't. So Tommaso Ciampa is your champion, despite a little moment with Bron Breakker. Tom?
Yeah, I might kick myself for saying this out loud however many months down the road, but I really don't. I never got the impression that the 2.0 is to stick around. I think it's just part of the signal. Like, hey, if you gave up, check it out again. I do not expect that to stick around. But, and on a Tony D'Angelo, that is very funny. I didn't pick up on the Buffalo thing. What made me laugh is that he's talking about where he's from, and then he says, but the real place to make money is NXT, with the dramatic pause and everything. So that was a laugh line to me. The real place to make money is NXT. But I'm fine with it because it wasn't the worst character introduction on the show. The opening promo with what's his face? Breakker was the worst. And I mean, yeah, the 90s were, or this particular phase of the 90s was what it was, but I mean, Razor Ramon's little vignettes before he debuted that character were worse, or if not, I'm not going to go as far as to say that they were worse, but they were of the same, they came from the same mind, you know? So I was fine with Tony D'Angelo doing his Al Capone thing. But yes, this the wrestling main event. I've been talking around it all night, so I'm like trying to remember what points I did end up killing and which ones I'm still. But yeah, I thought when this was a contender to Joe's thing that LA Knight absolutely had to win it, and then when what happened. I thought, okay, I thought the exact same thing that you already said about LA Knight, Kelly. And I thought, well, when something like this comes up, you got to do what you got to do. You got to try to make the chicken salad. And I still don't see Pete Dunne winning it here, though. Like, maybe last week in that version of NXT, but not here. And so I was thinking this probably was Ciampa's, and again, they showed the graphic of Pete Dunne's face first, but Tommaso Ciampa was the first person to speak on this show and the first person to address, you know, the new version of NXT, which, like, the most new thing about NXT is that everybody's calling it a new version of NXT, but he was the first one, and that was another major tip-off, I felt. And I think that the idea here is to, with all the new blood coming in, with the new color scheme and the new layout and people that are, you know, have all kinds of cold feet or whatever you want to call it about change, I think this is like, you could not pick a better flag bearer for the now bygone version of NXT than Tommaso Ciampa. And this is like the token, like, hey, there's still something for you. And I think we saw that in some of Nate's sentiments. And I think we saw that in Ginny's email, where she was very negative about the adjustments to the show. But then she said, at least Ciampa got back Goldie. That was her one positive point. So I believe that is the significance of this. And then, yeah, we get the stare down with Breaker. So cool. And Breaker also had a little bit of a stare down with Zion Quinn earlier in the show as well. So hopefully Quinn will get to show us his talents again sometime soon. He's like one of those people on that list where I'm just like, why the heck aren't they on TV yet? So thankfully it seems like he's factored in now. And on a night of throwing trainees into the fire on live TV, no one got thrown in there more than Cal Bloom as Val Walker.
Von Wagner.
I don't mind Val Walker. That would be fine. But
it's actually better than Von Wagner.
Von Wagner just sounds like it's only a last name. Like he should, yeah. Well, anyway, Val Von Wagner. It was just hilarious to me to see that he was the one that was getting the spot because he saved Kyle O'Reilly, because this is a guy who has been doing, you know, Coconut Loop Performance Center stuff for long enough now, and just and like showing up in Catch as Catch Can, and he's been in so many segments as a security guard lately, and they even changed out the entire security detail recently for an O'Reilly versus Cole promo off, except for him. He was still there, and I was just like, yeah, this guy's ship has sailed. It's not happening for Cal Bloom. Why is he still there? What's going on? And then, boom, first match on TV is a championship match with Tommaso Ciampa, Pete Dunne, and LA Knight. Holy crap. And I thought he did well. You know, the look is what it is. I like how, Kelly, you described that in our Skype chat, or wherever it was that you said that, Twitter or whatever. I'll leave that line to you. But I mean, he was asked the least of the four, as you would think, but every time he was in there, and yeah, sure, you could hardly ask for better opponents, but for a relatively chaotic four-way match in a big spot, I thought he lived up to it. So it was like, I mean, if everybody else was thrown into the fire, he was practically thrown to the wolves, and I thought he survived.
Von Wagner's skull is trying to leave the face. It wants to protrude. It wants out.
yeah.
And that's, you know, it's fine. It's the skull that he was born with, guys. He looks like he looks. I too thought that he was good in this match. To hell with those gatekeeper fans. It's unfortunate that wrestling is as such that fans are being the you got to pay your dues losers that normally used to just be people backstage, because now we can't have that surprise amazing moment and have it be 100%, because fans are booing because they're like, well, I didn't know this guy before today, so I have to boo him. Tell with you, y'all suck. Nate.
All right. So let's take a look here at, I'll go with Michael McGivern's email first. I just real quick, I kind of did like this. What was the Al Capone guy's name? Tommy D'Angelo or something like that?
Tony D'Angelo.
Tommy D'Angelo was the main character in Mafia, the video game, I believe. So Tony D'Angelo, I'm Italian. Even with the last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian. So, you know, big Italian family. I can latch on to this. I like it. So cool with that. You know, the University of Buffalo thing, you know, yeah, whatever. It's okay. Weird, but whatever. I can kind of just skip behind, you know, kind of skip over that, whatever. I'm interested to see, you know, what he's going to be in the ring. But you know, I did, I liked the promo or the vignette tonight. It was intriguing. I'm not 100% sold on it. I kind of want to see, you know, maybe a couple more of these vignettes, but it certainly piqued my interest. That's for sure. And then the main event proper, the match itself, I think it was unfortunately too short. It was just cut too short by, you know, the wedding tonight. There were probably some other things on the show that could have been cut, like you said earlier, Kelly, to make a little bit more time for this. Going into this, I really wasn't 100% sure who was going to win. I could kind of make a case for just about anybody, including Van Wilder, or whatever his name is, Von Wagner. Simply because it would have been like almost like a shock thing, like, you know, put the championship on the brand new guy. You really want to come up strong with somebody and really push somebody right out of the gate. Why not? You really want to do a rebrand? Why not? So I could kind of make the case for that. Ciampa, I'll be honest, he was actually the last person I thought that was going to win this. For a few reasons, because of the foreshadowing at the beginning of the show, I kind of thought that was almost too obvious. But also because he almost represents everything that they're trying to move away from. I feel like they're trying to move away from the old NXT. And when I think of the old NXT, it's Ciampa, Gargano, like even like Kevin Owens for that matter. I still kind of go back to that era in my head in NXT. I don't necessarily, you know, that's exactly who I, you know, those are the people that I think of. So I felt like where they were trying to get away from that, they wouldn't go with Ciampa. Dunn kind of felt like an afterthought as well here. He's felt important every other week, not necessarily here. However, Dunn is also well deserving of it. So I could kind of make the case for him as well. He's kind of toyed with that main event scene for a while And I could kind of maybe see them pulling the trigger on him here because he is, you know, still, I don't say he's new because he's not really fresh blood, but you know, he still hasn't had that title and whatnot. I kind of make a case for that, but I was pleasantly surprised when Ciampa won. Ciampa's one of my guys. Like I'm a huge Tommaso Ciampa fan. So glad to see that happen. Glad to see him as a 2-time champion. It does have me scratching my head a little bit because I feel like it goes against a little bit of this whole NXT 2.0 thing. But at the same time, I'm okay with it because he's my guy. I honestly thought it was going to be LA Knight. I really had my money on LA Knight to win this tonight. You know, I think that earlier in the night, him having the match with Breaker or whatever his name is, you know, I don't know if that was like, cause I didn't even really bring that up. They didn't like say that, you know, he was tired because of the match earlier tonight or they didn't really draw too much attention to it. But you know, obviously they can use that as a bit of a crutch as to why he lost. But I felt like he was kind of almost the obvious choice to go with coming into tonight.
I think he's done. I really think he's done.
But
I think
but
they gave Breaker the rub. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I agree. I think after tonight, he's done. He's going up. He's main roster ready. I was talking with Zach about that last night. He's one of the few acts in NXT that is main roster ready. And I feel like Vince could just pluck him right out of NXT and put him straight into his sandbox and not really have to make any major changes. Because I feel like he is somebody that Vince could play with, you know, pretty easily. But yeah, Ciampa won. I'm completely on board. I'm all for it. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be a long reign. I think it's more of a transitional thing to somebody that's going to be, you know, kind of newer blood, if you will. But I think it's a good call, a good move, because, well, when you think of NXT, like I said, you think of Ciampa. Who else? Who's better to beat?
I knew this was going to go long, and it did, folks. But there was a lot to cover aesthetically and a lot of matches and a lot of things. I don't think that future shows will take this long, but this one did. So Nathaniel Gaylord Lindbergh 2.0, do you solemnly swear to keep this podcast, to have and to hold till death do you part?
Yeah, okay, why not? Sure, I could do that.
Thomas Ophelia Pack Prica Stout 2.0. Do you the same?
I'm just flashing my axe at you.
That
I like my name. I was gonna do the fake name thing too, but yours was better, and I like Ophelia Peck Prica. I think I might keep that.
All right, that is at Tom Staup on Twitter. That is at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. That is at Spooky Milk on Twitter. My name is Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at that, but also SpookyMilk.games. If you got anything more to say, guys, anything more to plug, go ahead.
Nate, did you know that you can subscribe to Willing Creatures on YouTube?
I did not.
I'm stepping on your toes, man. I've got a D&D group now. I've had a D&D group for 4 years. And if you're still listening to this podcast now, maybe you want to subscribe to that, because I'm on that. And we are in the waning months of a campaign that's been going on for 4 years, so you can listen to how that ends. But whether you do or don't, it's cool, because we are going to pick up shortly thereafter with a whole new campaign with new characters, and our DM is a really talented musician. He's writing, he said, somewhere between 40 and 60 original tracks of background music for it. It's done in podcast style, so you can listen to it while you're doing other things. And I mean, the best selling I can do for it is that I tried out this D&D thing 4 years ago, 4+ years ago, because I got invited and I was like, I'll do the one session and I can always say that I did. And this DM hooked me right there, and I'm still doing it every week with the same group. So he's an excellent storyteller, and Willing Creatures is the name of the YouTube channel where you can listen to the two episodes that are up right now, one of which I do a really weird voice in. So if that's a selling point, there you go. And this plug will get shorter later on. It'll probably just become subscribe to Willing Creatures on YouTube once you guys all know what that is. But any links that you may be looking for they are at Tom Staup on Twitter.
And I guess if Tom was going to get into all of that, I may as well plug at DegeTime, DegeTime, where we take a therapeutic look at tabletop role-playing games. And I may as well announce it for the first time here, because, hey, why not? My partner Conrad and I have decided we're going to be doing a complete overhaul of the show. We're going to make things a little bit shorter, a little bit easier to watch, a little more fun to watch, and kind of just easier to digest. We're going to break things up into a couple different shows, and I think it's going to be good. Hopefully we're going to have this coming out within the next month or two, but we're going to have it's going to be broken down a lot easier for people to kind of come in, take a look at all the different games, learn those games through our show, and then easily go to a different playlist and look at the therapeutic benefits of those particular games. I'm really looking forward to it. Conrad's really looking forward to it. We still got a couple kinks to work out how we're going to actually structure the show. We're getting there, but we're hoping that the rest of season two will be in that format. So if you guys want to check that out, that's at DegeTime on Twitter. Same thing on YouTube, DegeTime. And you can take a therapeutic look at role-playing games with us degenerates.
There you go, folks. Longest show ever. We're sorry, but we also thank you for hanging out. And we love you in the biblical sense. All right. So cheers, folks.
Gross.
We will see you in 7.